Today's daf in Masechet Yoma is daf Chof Aleph, and we actually got a little bit into the daf today yesterday, so we're holding at the top. We just finished discussing the Krot HaGever, which was the last thing we had, was the Braita that was a riot of Shila, that we were talking about a Tarnagol. So we're up to Omar Rev Yehuda, Omar Rav. So we're six lines down now. Om Rav Yudom Rav. B'sha'ash Yisrael, at the time that Klal Yisrael used to come in into the Beis HaMikdash, and there were early in L'Regel, this could be on Yom Kippur as well, Omdim Tzifufim U'mishtachavim Revachim. So they would stand together, and obviously things were very, very crowded, because the Mishnah mentioned the fact that the entire Azora was filled with Yisrael, which is why we had to have the early Trumas Hadesha. So here, the Hishtach Avoya, whenever there was a hearing, the Shem Hashem, on Yom Kippur was a big problem, because the Hishtach Avoya on Yom Kippur, everybody did at exactly the same moment, and not only that, but they also had to say Vidui. And in order to say vidui and not be heard by the person that's standing right next to you, so besides the issue of being right next to somebody else and being barely able to breathe when you're standing straight, so how could you possibly bow down? But in these happened that they were mishtachavim with revocha on Yom Kippur to have four amos between each individual when they bowed, in order that each person could have their own private space in order to say vidui. And this was a tremendous nes. And at the end, now this doesn't make sense, the Gemara is going to explain it here, there were so many people that they extended all the way into the back behind the Beis HaMikdash, so that those 11 Amos that we saw on the map, that are behind the Kotel HaMaravi of the Azora, and the Kotel HaMaravi of the Bayit, was also filled with people. I said, what is that supposed to mean? If you're contradicting yourself. First you say there was this Nes, and then you're saying that the people were pushed out of whack and they had to go all the way to the south. So, I mean, they didn't have room, you mean, to be mishtachra. No. What Rav was saying was like this. Even though that when they were standing without ishtachavoya, so people were pushed along the edges of the Azora, and they ended up getting pushed all the way into the 11 Amos behind. So afapishinim shochim, achadisrei ama, achorei beta kapor, obviously they were only... didn't actually go into the area of the Mizbeach or anything like that, but around the sides they would go, and that meant that they had no room at all, because when you needed to be Mishtachava, you needed to be Mishtachava towards the Bayit from the east, and if they were in the west, so how were they Mishtachava? Nonetheless, that was the nes, that even though they were so pushed, when they were standing in their own dim tzifufim, despite all that extra space, kishem mishtachavim, mishtachavim revachim, when they needed to be mishtachaveh, everyone would be able to move into the east of the bayit, and there would be plenty of space to bow down in. And this was one of the asara nisim, shenasu b'mikdash. There were 10 nisim, the Tanan, the Mishnah Ove says, asara nisim nasu b'beit ha-mikdash. What were the 10 nisim? Lo yipila isha mireach basar hakodesh. So even though the entire area was filled with the smell of meat that was being burnt on the mizbeach, there was no cravings by a pregnant woman who would come in there that would cause her to miscarry. Velo yisriach basar hakodesh miyoyla. And basar kodesh, even though it might have been on the mizbeach, on top of the mizbeach, remember it's not nivsa belina, it might have been there for a couple of days because there were so many korbanos. Doesn't matter. Never. Rotted, and this would also be true on the Besar Shlomim, which could be eaten for 2 days, and 2 days without any kind of cooling, obviously it ought to become rotted meat, putrid meat, but it didn't. V'lo nira zvuv b'beit ha-mitbachayim, despite the fact that they were cleaning off all of this meat right there next to the Mizbeach, on the Shulchanos, there was never a fly ever seen there. V'lo era keri l'kohen gadol b'yom ha-kippurim, never that the Kohen Gadol was Roya Keri, this again, I mean, it's rather strange to us. As I mentioned yesterday, it doesn't seem like very miraculous, especially with the fact that we were doing all of these things to make sure he never even fell asleep. But again, we're missing something. So obviously the specific kayach of Ra on Yom Kippur and the whatever elements of Ra were left needed to be fought specifically in this way. V'lo nimtzu psul ba'omer, or in the Shtei Alechem, or in the Lechem HaPanim. Now, there were three things. If there would have been any psul found, we wouldn't have been able to do much about it. Because, I mean, the Omer, we didn't really have. It's not that it's impossible, because we saw before that if there's alternatives to the Omer, so we let him bring an alternative, it was Nifsal Tachas Yadei. But if not, remember what we say to him, just shut up and be smart. Because we don't have an alternative. Because remember, I mean, all of these things needed to be prepared before. So the where were we going to get other Omer? It's possible we took enough, you know, but I mean, it needs to go through Yud Gimel Nafes, as we'll see. And this is not a simple thing. And so it was unlikely that we'd be able to replace it if there was a psul. The Shtei Alechem also, it had to be prepared before. It's not Deicha. And if how would we get other ones if anything happened to it? And the Lechem HaPanim as well had to be prepared before Shabbos. So those are all nisim, that nothing ever went wrong. Omtim, Tzifufim, Mishtachim, and Revachim, which Rav just discussed. And an additional two nisim, which took place in Yerushalayim. Lo Yizik, Nachash, V'Akrav, B'Yerushalayim, Mi'olam. There was never anyone that was hurt by a scorpion or by a snake in Yerushalayim. V'lo Amar Adam L'Chaviro, Tzar Li, Amakom Sha'alim, B'Yerushalayim. Even though there was a mitzvah on the Regalim, that whoever had come up to be a little regal needed to stay overnight, which would have meant that there was tremendous pressure on places to stay in Yerushalayim. For some reason, nobody ever said, I couldn't find myself a room. Wait a minute. You said there were 10 nisim in the Beis HaMikdash, and then you list two nisim that take place in Yerushalayim. That's not what you said you were going to say. That's true. There are two other nisim that we didn't mention that were in the Beis HaMikdash. Titania. Me'olam lo chivu kishamim esh shalatzia ma'aracha. No matter how hard it rained, there was never a problem with the fire that was burning on the Mizbeah. And the other nis was that the ashana ma'aracha, afil kol aruchot shebo'olam ba'ot ben ha'shvot po, ein mezizil toto mimekomo. So no matter how much the wind would blow, it could not blow away the smoke that was coming up from the Mizbeach and would always go straight up, and there was never smoke in the Azar. The air was always perfectly clean of smoke. Ask the Gemara, wait a second, there were more things, and how come you didn't list them? V'tuleika, v'tanya, Rav Shemaya, b'kal nevo, shivreich lecheres, were nivla'im b'mekoman. Remember that in those days, the equivalent that we have to disposable dishes was not plastic, it was glycheris, which was manufactured in tens of thousands. You weren't able to keep it because anything that it absorbed, remember, glycheris is never able to get rid of its absorbed material. Because of that, anything absorbed in the Beis HaMikdash would become nosar, and that would make the glycheris treif. So they had to break it, like it says in the Pasuk Yishaver. And, I mean, the place should have been filled with tens of thousands of pieces of broken klicheres. And what happened was that they were nivloim b'mekoman. These were thrown away. And this was a very advanced form of disposables. They were absorbed into the ground on the spot, not over 10,000 years. So this was an amazing nes. The Amrabaya, there were other things also that were absorbed into the ground. The Mura v'Noitza, which were the feathers in the crop of the Oilas Ha'ov, and the Dishun, Mizbeach HaPnimi, when they took all of the ashes off from the Mizbeach Hazav, the Dishun HaMenera, that was taken, we learned about before, all of those things were thrown into that same spot next to the Kevesh, and they were all absorbed into the ground. Nivla'im b'mekoman. Here's an interesting question, because we learned before that the according to Rashi at least, that the Trumas HaDeshen was also put down and was absorbed. And for some reason, it doesn't say that over here, where Tosfos points out that that's mashma, that it wasn't so. And it doesn't say anywhere beferish that it was Nivla b'mekoman. So maybe Rashi was wrong, says the Rabbeinu Tam. Although He explains why it's not necessarily true that it's wrong. Anyway, but now that means that we've got too many Nisim over here. Well, remember that there were three different Nisim that you listed that really are part of one set, and that was the Omer, the Shtei Alechem, and the Lechem Aponim. None of them were Nifsolim. That should be one Nes, essentially. So Chashvinu Bechad, so that means those three are reduced to one, which means we now have room for two more Nisim. Fine, those were the Nisim that we mentioned a moment ago. Rav Shmaya's Nes about the broken dishes, and Abaya's Nes about the more of an Otsa that was absorbed in the coma. Wait a second. If we're looking at sets, so then Abaya and Rav Shmaya is also a set. It's a set of things that were absorbed right smack bang into the ground, right? So what happened? Those should also be one. So if those are one, now we're missing one. So Chashvina Bechad, and now Chasra Behu. Well, there's another one. And that was Dom Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Nes, this is, of course, the Nes that we read about yesterday, with the story of the Mekalo. In the Parsha, the Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, Neis Kadola Yana Aser Lechem HaPanim, namely that Siluko Kisiduro. When the Lechem HaPanim was taken off of the Shulchan a week later, after having been put down fresh, it was as hot as it was when it was taken out of the Tanur to be put down on the Shulchan. Shenemar Lasum Lechem Chom B'yom Hilakecho, that the bread should be as hot, biyomi lakacho, as it was when it was put down. Of course, this was a tremendous nes, and it was similar to the next nis, or I should say nisim. The next two nisim that we are about to read are also the same issue, because the next ones are, asks the Gemara, if you're going to utilize that, then v'tu leka, the Amar Rabbi Levi, davar zem besoret biyadenu miavotenu, Mokom Aran, Enomen Amida, Yom Rabna Yom Eshmul, the Kruvim, the Nesa Yu Omdim. So this is a reference to the fact that when we measure the 10 Amos that were from the side of the Oren to the side walls, we measure 10 Amos. And yet the Mokom HaOren itself, obviously, should have taken up space. It was 2.5 Amos by 1.5 Amos. How come we don't measure that? So apparently it didn't show up in three-dimensional space when we measured it. Not only that, the Kruvim, when the Pasuk describes the Kruvim, it says that each wing of each Kruv was 5 Amos, and it mentions together that the total wingspan of a Kruv was 10, of the Kruvim was 10 Amos. And somehow or other, if that's the case, then that means that from one end, as it says, Beferish, one end of the Hechel to the other end was all taken up by the 20 Amos of the wings of the two Kruvim. So if that's the case, what about the body of the Kruv? Surely the body of the Kruv takes up some space. We had the same idea that the Mokom of the Oren and the Kruvim was not part of three-dimensional space. Now, that's exactly the Nes that we just spoke about, except one of them is a Nes in space and one of them is a Nes in time. Because essentially, the fact that the lechem didn't get cooled meant that there was no entropic time that was functioning there, right? So if it stayed hot, that means that there was all the laws of thermodynamics broke down, which means that there was no entropy, which means there was no direction of time. So in the same way that there was no space in the Mikdash, in the Kodesh HaKodashim, there was no time in the Mikdash. So this means that basically, you were in a completely different dimension when you were in the Kodesh HaKodashim. So these Nisim are interrelated. But once you're going to be talking about the Nes of the Lechem HaPanim, then you would have to also mention the other Nisim, which are basically the same issue, and that is that the Mokom HaOren Eino Min HaMida. Answers the Gemara, Nisi Devaroi Kachoshev, Nisi Degavoi Lo Kachoshev. We only talk about Nisim that could be seen outside of the Hecha. But things that only were seen inside, that we didn't mention. Wait a minute. So then we're back where we started from, because the Lechem HaPanim wasn't visible outside. So we shouldn't have listed that. So now we're back again to the problem that we had before, that we are missing one of the Nisim, because the Yachi Lechem HaPanim Nami, isn't that considered to be a Nes de Gavoi? No. The lechem apanim is actually considered to be a nes devaroi. It was a nes visible from the outside. How is that? The Omer Reish Lakish, why does the pasuk say something very strange? It says, V'samto otam shtayim ma'arachot sheish ha'ma'arechet al ha'shulchan ha'tohor. Lifnei Hashem. So what does he mean, al ha'shulchan ha'tohor? Remember that whenever we talk about something being tohor, it has to mean that it is potentially tameh, because otherwise the concept of tohor would not be applicable to it. It's not part of the set of things where that adjective can be used. So if you're saying, Mai tichtiv ha'shulchan ha'tohor, tohor must mean shehu tameh. It means that it's possible for it to be tummy. And if it were tummy, I wouldn't put the lechem aponim on it. But how in the world could the shulchan be ever tummy? Didn't we learn in Kalim that a kli eitza asur l'nachat is not metami? And the shulchan was never moved. Once we put it there, it was meant to stay in its place. So it's a kli eitza asur l'nachat, the whole kli eitza asur l'nachat, enu mekabel tuma. And of course, part of the Mishnah is that it's also chotitz b'fnei atuma, because it's not. There we're talking, of course, about kelim that were too big to move. This is because, remember, that it's put in the same pasuk together with sak. So sak and eitz are compared in the Torah, and sak is metaltem olivereko. So we learn out from that that it's something that is moved about. Okay, so there we're talking about gigantic kelim that are not moved easily. Here we're talking about a kli that is not moved because it was permanently placed. By the way, you may be worried about the fact that the shulchan wasn't made out of wood. And the shulchan was gold, covered with gold at least, right? It's made out of wood. But we also learned in Kalim that you go according to the cover. And if everything is covered with gold, what's the problem? The shulchan is the shulchan ha-tahor because it's mekabel tuma as a metal kli because it was covered with gold. So the Gemara asks that in Chagiga. And the Gemara says that since the Torah, in this case, defines the shulchan, it's called a shulchan eitz, it means that in this case, the chashivut was the eitz and not the tzipui, and therefore it would have a din of kli eitz, in which case it shouldn't be mekabel tuma if it was also the nachas. So how do you explain that? Aha, says Reish Lakish. From there we learn a beautiful thing. What we learn is that melamed shemagbiina tola olei haregalim v'omrim lehem re'u chibatchem lifnei ha'makom. So you see from there that we had to open up the doors, lift up the shulchan, so that people could actually see the lechem aponim steaming. And they saw there was steaming hot a week later. And this was to be megala. And of course, this is the whole point of the lechem aponim, that is ponim lekan ulekan. It's a sign of that lushan of ponim in both directions is that the way that we refer to the lev ha'adam el ha'adam. So it's the same, it's kipanim, the same way that a person, another person's face reflects the other person. Kein lev ha'adam la'adam. So the idea over here would be that the lechem aponim is a simon of chiba, it's a simon of relationship. Because of that, we wanted to show them that it's there, that time does not play a role. So we lifted up the lechem aponim to show them this unbelievable nes. We tell them, look how much you are loved by HaKadosh Baruch, that this is something that remains fresh as if it just happened now. It never wears out, never cools off. So that means that love between HaKadosh Baruch and our Klal Yisrael doesn't cool down.
Rebbe, would fit with Yira Yira of the Olim Golim as a time of Yira Yira.
Yes, excellent, thank you. Yes. With two leka. So you're telling me there were no more miracles in the Beis HaMikdash? Didn't Rav Hoshaya say that at the time that Shlomo HaMelech was bein in the Beit HaMikdash, Natabo kol minei migadim shel zahav, he planted fruit trees that were made out of gold. And these fruit trees would grow golden fruit. And by Nes, these fruit would appear made out of gold. And when the wind would blow at the proper time, they would actually fall off of the tree, and they would gather them and sell them. And there was a tremendous amount of money that was made from that gold. Because we find that we refer David HaMelech refers, Levanon is like the Beis HaMikdash, which is always called Alevanon, and the fruit, we're talking about the fruit, should make the noise like the fruit in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what it's referring to. The moment that the Goyim entered into the Heichal and the Shechina departed, everything just dried up on the spot. It's completely wiped out. The Atira Kadosh Baruch Hu Lachziran, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring them back to us. Shenemar, Boruach Tifrach V'Tagel, Av Gilad V'Ranein, Kevod HaLevanon Nitanla. So it's ending, it will end up to be blossoming beautifully and with happiness and with song. And that beautiful thing from the Beis HaMikdash, Levanon, will be given to her. So this, Yishayahu says, is going to be Latid Lavo. But why doesn't the Tana include that Nes during the time that the Nes was functional in the Beis HaMikdash until the Nochrim came in? It's such a beautiful Nes. Says the Gemara, indeed, Nesi Dikvi Loko Chashiv. Things that were just part of the way things were in the Beis HaMikdash, and nothing had to change from a status that was there before, are not included in the list. Now, once that's true, then we don't need to give the teretz we gave about the Aron V'Kruvim, because that's just the way things were. So the Aron V'Kruvim Nami are Nisidik V'Eninu. So these vines that were planted by Shlomo HaMelech originally with the Beis HaMikdash, they're not reflective of any changes. And because of that, we don't mention them. We mention the things where each time it's a new Nes to us. Okay, so now let's get back to the list that you mentioned. You mentioned one of the nisim was that the Ashan HaMaracha, the smoke that was coming up from the Maracha on the Mizbeach, no matter how bad the winds were, they could not scatter that smoke. I only have one minor problem with this. There wasn't any smoke at all on the Maracha. Because Umiyavi Ashan B'Maracha, was there smoke on the Maracha? V'Tanya, it says in the Braita, there were five special things that were said about the fire on the Mizbeach, which had come down min hashamayim. So first of all, it was ruvutza ka'ari, that when the fire came down, it had the shape of a lion that was crouching. And that shape remained with it all the years. Uvarakechama was incredibly clear. The fire. The Yeshba Mamash, it had actual physical substance to it. So that it wasn't just that there was the coal to which, it would attach itself. The fire itself actually had a presence that you could touch. The Ochelet Lachim Kiveshim, and it was not like a normal fire because it would completely oxidize anything, even if it was wet, like Avarim, or wood that was wet, exactly the same way as if it were dry. The Enama Le'ashan. And here's the last thing, is that it didn't create smoke. So how could there be smoke on the Maracha if the fire of the Maracha didn't allow for smoke? No, we're talking about over here, the fire that was brought down by the Kohanim as well. So Kika Amrina Bedehed Yod, because remember, we learned in the Braita of Natnu b'nei Aaron HaKohen Shalom Mizbeach that what is the meaning of the pasuk that you always have to put on Esh? This is telling, I mean, obviously you're going to have to burn the korbanos. No. It's telling us that af al pi she'esh yoredet min hashamayim, even though we have this crouching lion of pure fire that's on the Mizbeach, there's a mitzvah that Kohanim have to bring the Esh anyway. Mitzvah lahavim min ha'hedyot. So that was regular fire. And that fire, of course, made smoke. And that smoke was the Ashan HaMaracha that would never be able to be blown away. Now, just wait a second. Didn't you say that one of the things about the Esh that was Yored Ben HaShamayim was that it was crouching like a lion? Ruvutza Ka'ari. But there's a Braita that says that Rabbi Chanina's Kana Kohanim said, I saw the Esh that was on the Maracha. And it was Ravuta Kechelet. Didn't look like a lion. It looked like a dog. Lokasha. Kan b'migdash Rishon and Kan b'migdash Sheni. So it depends. The first Beis HaMikdash that was built by Yehuda, and Yehuda is Gur Aryeh Yehuda, it was shaped like a lion. But the second Beis HaMikdash was built by Poras. And remember that the Sheigal that was on the throne was a dog, according to one man, the Omer. That's how Asha understands. It's very cute. So Kanvi Mikdash Sheini, because of that, it was never Zeicher to the presence of the Gur Aryeh Yehuda. But I thought there was not any kind of fire that came down Minas Shemayim at all in the second Beis HaMikdash. Because the Amr of Shmuel Bar Yina, Ma'idichtiv, the Ertzebo v'ikavda. Why does it say that you should go ahead, build the Mikdash, which is a reference to the second Beis HaMikdash, and I'll be happy with it, and it will be an honor to me. But the word v'ikavda is missing the hey. We read it, Karina nikavda. But it's written as if it is v'yikaved. So maishna the mechuser hey. Ah, the mechuser hey is a remiss to five things. Elu chamisha dvarim shayu ben migdash rishon migdash sheni. These are the big differences. Note, by the way, how much this has been thematic over here in Yoma, that we're discussing the differences between the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, the first Churban, the second Churban, the differences between the Mishkan and the Mikdash. Because again, we established at the beginning of the Masechet that the idea of the Miluim is central to Yom HaKippurim. And the idea of the Shechina, which is Shoreb B'toch Tumotam, is that which was created by the Miluim and is recreated every year by Yom HaKippurim. And because of that, it's very important to us to understand all of the issues that were in the Bate Mikdash, the Hashras HaShchina, and the way it expressed itself, and the differences between the Yerida Bizman, and the differences between the Beis HaMikdash HaRishon and the Beis HaMikdash HaSheni, and the vision of Geula Atida, the things that we hope to get back. So these were the five things. What were the five things? So we had the Orin, together with the Kapiras and the Kruvim, that they were all missing, remember, from the time of Yoshio, that these three things, or one thing we're counting, these were put into the special chamber that Shlomo HaMelech had built. We were missing the Eish Min HaShamayim. We were missing the presence of the Shechina. And of course, the hay, as Rabbeinu Bachya points out, a missing hay is always a remiss to a missing Shechina. And an extra hay is always a remiss to the Shechina being present. So the Shechina was missing. Ruach HaKedesh, that there was no Nevi'im anymore, after Chagai Zechariah Malachi, who had been misnabe also from before. So they continued to be misnabe, but there were no new Nevi'im. And that was Choser, and the Urim V'Tumim. That doesn't mean the Urim V'Tumim was Choser. Obviously, we had to have the actual Urim V'Tumim in order to have kosher begodim, as Tosis points out. What it means is that there was no active Urim V'Tumim, that the Urim V'Tumim didn't work as a communicator between the Kohen Gadol and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You couldn't present questions to the Urim V'Tumim. But anyway, the mashmaut is that there was no fire. It says over here that it was Choser. The Eish was Choser. So how can Rabbi Chanina Sekan HaKohanim say that he saw the Eish in the second Beis HaMikdash and it had the shape of a kelev? Answers the Gemara, in. It's not that it wasn't there. When we say it was Choser the Eish, it means that it just stood there and it didn't do anything. It didn't actually eat up the karbonas. So in the first place, HaMikdash, the Kohanim brought eitz just to be mekayim the mitzvah of avas eish min ha-hedyot. But in the second Beis HaMikdash, if you wouldn't have brought eish min ha-hedyot, nothing would have burned. Tan Rabbanan, sheish ishotin. There's six things that we refer to as fire. There's a ochelet bein ashota. There's fire that will only eat things, but will not drink things. So meaning it can't actually oxidize liquid. But there's fire that only drinks things, but won't eat things. There's fire that both is ochelet and shota. There's the kind of fire that won't drink, but it is capable of oxidizing things that are damp and moist, like evorim. And then there's eish doche eish. There's fire that will push other fire away. We call that fighting fire with fire. And then there's an eish that's ochelet eish. There's fire that can completely consume and absorb other fire. Let's go through it. Yesh eish ochelet ve'ina shota. That's what we call fire, regular fire. There's Aish that seems to drink but doesn't eat. That's the Aish of people who are sick, meaning that they're burning up with an internal fire, which is consuming, so it ought to be oxidizing things, and yet they don't have any appetite, but they get completely dehydrated. So apparently that fire drinks up the water. So that's fire that will drink water, but is not causing you to get hungry. So it's not oxidizing the food. Then there's fire that will eat and drink mamish liquid. And that was the fire of Eliyahu HaNavi, because it says over there at the moment that he was confronting the Nevi'e Abal. So it says at Hamayim Asher Beta'ala Lechecha, that the fire actually licked up all the water that they had poured. And he said, pour again. But they filled it up, this ditch all around the Evorim. They filled it up with water, and the fire consumed all of that water. And that is literally to drink. There's fire that doesn't drink, but it will also oxidize things that are damp. That's the fire that we just discussed, which the Esh on the Ma'aracha. And then we have Esh that's Doche Esh. That's referring to the Esh of Gavriel, which, remember, the Gemara spoke about when Nebuchadnezzar sent Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah into the furnace we had back in Pesachim, the story that Gavriel said he's going to bring Esh, and it'll be Docha, that Esh. So he made it cool inside, and he reversed. He had it, he turned the air conditioner to heater, so... or vice versa, he turned the heater to the air conditioner and it took out all of the heat from inside and brought it outside. And then we have also Esh Ochelet Esh. We have a fire that can completely subsume other energy. And what's that referring to? That's referring to the Esh of the Shekhinah. The Amar Mar Hoshit Etzpo B'Nehem V'Sorafan. So they were talking about the famous Medrash that we had, that the Malachi Ashores, they asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he said, Na'asa Adam B'Tzalmenu. So they said, what do you need to have ma'anosh ketizkarenu? What do you need people for? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his etzba ketana kevayocho and burned them up. So how do you burn up things that are made out of pure energy? Oh, you see that there's dark energy that can absorb other energy. So there's esh that is seref esh, and it absorbs other esh. Okay, getting back to the Mishnah. Hashana ma'aracha afilu kol haruchot shebaolam ein mezizot oto b'mekoma. But is that true? Didn't Rav Yitzchak Bar Avidimi said that on the last day of Sukkot, which was the time in which there was a psak in the Shamayim, that were nidain al hamayim, so everyone wanted to know, so how did the din on the mayim, how did it come out? Were we zocha to have a good year? So everybody would look at the Ashan HaMaracha. If the Ashan HaMaracha was bent towards the north, so then the Aniyim would be very happy, and the Baalei Batim would be miserable. Why? Because that would mean Shigishmei Shana Merubin, if it was towards the north, so then that would mean that there was going to be a lot of rain that year, because the wind must be blowing from the south. And the wind blowing from the south is the source of rain during the year. So because of that, they wouldn't be able to store the produce, and it would rot, so they would have to market it, so the price would go down. So because of that, the Aniyim were very happy. Okay, but that means that we're looking at an effect of wind on the Ma'aracha, right? I thought you said the wind couldn't blow the Ma'aracha. If it was Note Klapi Dorom, so then that would mean that the wind was blowing from the north as a simon, so then the Aniyim would be miserable, the Baalei Batim would be happy, because that would show that the Gishmei Shana Muatim, and because of that they could store things until prices went up, and only then they would allow the sales to go on. So because of that, they could make sure that they made a lot of money, and they were happy, but the Aniyim were sad, because it meant that produce would be expensive. If it was not a Klape Mizrach, it would mean that the wind was blowing from the west. So then everybody would be happy, because that's the way that things are when things are settled and normal. There's enough rain, things are not overly wet, and therefore you could make money, but not store things too long. Klape Ma'arav, and if the wind was coming out of the east, then everybody would be miserable, because that's the Chamsinim, and it would be hot, and it would be dry, and that was meant that there would be poor produce, bichlal. There wouldn't be enough produce, there wouldn't be enough water. Anyway, but the bottom line is that obviously the Ashana Maracha was going to be moved around by the wind, and people would be able to look and to be able to see whether it was moving, which direction it was moving. So what are you telling me, that they couldn't move no matter how powerful the wind was? No, that what I mean when I said it couldn't be moved, I mean it couldn't be blown away. Usually when the wind comes, like, you know, it goes all over the place. Over here, there would be an Eisha Maracha, would be like a palm tree going straight up. If the wind blew, then the palm tree, so to speak, could move as a palm tree. You couldn't blow it around, but the entire thing could turn and move back and forth like a palm tree. But Abadure lo havi mipa there, you couldn't blow it away. That was the nace that we were talking about. Okay, but ask the Gemara, but wait a second. You're saying that a wind from the east, is from the west, when it was turning the palm tree towards the east, that's a good sign? And in the opposite, it's a bad sign? I thought it says just the opposite. Omar mar, klape mizrach hakol smechim, klape marav hakol atzevim. Exactly the opposite. You say, v'raminu mizrachit lolom yafa. Here it says in a brighter that the wind coming from the east is a good sign, and a wind coming from the west is bad. Lo'olam kasha. Ruach tzvonit, if the wind blows from the north, then it's yafel achitim b'shashe v'yushlish. If the chitim have already grown to one-third of their growth, that's a good thing. And it's bad, however, if it's coming from the north, for zeitim. If it starts blowing at a time that the olive trees are just blossoming, their chontim, it's bad for them. And ruach dromit is kosher lechitim b'shar shev yushlish v'yofa lezeitim b'zman she'en chontim mashenki, from the south, that is good for the zeisim, because that's a lot of rain, which is not good for wheat that is already mostly grown, but is very good for blossoming trees. Anyway, so there's a way to remember this. If you want to remember what direction is good for what, the simon to remember is that the shulchan is on the north side of the heichal, and the menorah is on the south side of the heichal, which means that high marba didei, the high marba didei. So the shulchan was the shulchan alechem aponim, which is made out of wheat. And the menorah obviously requires the shemen zayit zach, which is good for the olives. So it reminds us that if the wind comes from the north, like the shulchan, it's good for wheat. And if the comes from the south, it's good for the olives. Okay, beautiful remez. But meanwhile, we've got a contradiction. Which direction is good and which direction is bad? Answers the Gemara, nah, no problem at all. Remember, there were a lot of people that came up to the Olei Regolim from Bavel. So they had a completely different feeling about it than we did. Halan v'halahu. Both of them are basically saying the same things. The question is where do those phenomena have a good implication, where they have a bad implication? So the Brisa that says that if it's coming out of the east, that's good, that's in Bavel. Because in Bavel, there was such a high water table, and it's always damp there. So to have a lot of rain is very bad. So they were very happy when it came from the east. But in Eretz Yisrael, where you need a lot of rain, so over there, it was a siman that it would be a bad year.